Welcome, everyone, to a very special episode of the Infertility Feelings Podcast. We are joined today by Dr. Laura Shaheen. Dr. Laura is a board-certified OBGYN, a reproductive endocrinologist, a podcast host, a YouTube artist, a music artist, maybe. I don't know.
No, definitely not.
But you're also an author, and you're a wonderful person, and we're so grateful to have you on the podcast today.
I am so excited to be here. I have followed you guys on TikTok, I think is where I first found you. I am really fangirling right now. You guys create such supportive content. And every time I see it, it hits a nerve because I'm like, I really wish that this content was out there when I was struggling with my own fertility journey. I'm really, really happy to connect with you guys.
Yeah. Right back at you.
The fangirling goes both ways, is what we're trying to say.
Doug is fangirling currently fangirling. No, but I would love to talk about that. I know that we have other things that we're going to cover, but like, I would just love to hear your experience with infertility because actually before this moment, I don't think I knew that you had struggled with infertility.
I get a little bit nervous about sharing it too much because what I don't want to, I mean, I'm happy to share, but I'm just saying like the reason you probably don't hear me talk about it a ton is number one, I never want to pretend that because I suffered with infertility that I know what everybody else's journey is. And I just like, so I don't want to like wear it like a t-shirt. Like I do sometimes share it with patients.
Yeah,
but it's not like I lead with it, you know, because I want to share, I want to connect with people, but it's like, I just want to be sensitive to other people's journeys.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So much of when people were trying to comfort me during my journey was sharing their own experiences to try to, and it's not like the pain Olympics. It's not like we have to try to prove how we suffered more. Everybody's journey is their own. So. And then there's a part of me that I do have two biologic children. I was successful with my goals of having a family in the ways that I pursued, and I'll share in a second. And there's a part of me that always is going to feel guilty about that. Just to be totally honest, like I you don't see me post on Instagram a lot of stuff about being a mom or even photos of my kids. I'm happy to talk about that. I just don't think kids are content, but also it's also kind of like, yes, I struggled, but also, you know how it's like you're infertile and you connect with all of these different people because you're on the same journey. And then you do get pregnant and then you're like, oh, you know, crap. Like I feel bad about it.
Someone in our group said it perfectly. She says, I have the worst case of survivor guilt.
Yeah.
It's like I survived. I got it. And I feel guilty. I feel guilty that I got it, but I'm happy that I got it, but I feel guilty. That's so true.
Exactly. And so there's a lot of mixed emotions that come with it. So you said I'm a board certified OBGYN reproductive endocrinologist. Yeah. I was in school for a long time.
You were.
So I didn't start trying to conceive until my like really close to 30, like around 30, which now seems so young because that was so long ago. And I just assumed like everyone else, you know, you assume that you're fertile until you realize that you're not. So, you know, took out my IUD, wasn't getting periods, thought I'd totally trashed my uterus. Of course, as a doctor trying to treat myself, found out, you know, I was like, oh, just give me Clomid. Just, you know, like my chief resident, I was like, just give me Clomid. I'm sure it's like, she's like, no, we're going to do some tests. Found out I had, hyperprolactinemia, so a little microadenoma in my anterior pituitary gland that was making too much prolactin. I wasn't ovulating. And so once we figured that out and started taking medication and ovulating, I was able to conceive my daughter pretty, you know, in the old fashioned way. And just like anybody that kind of might struggle or figure something out, I was ready to have another baby. And I thought, well, I got this.
Let's do the same thing I did last time.
We're just going to treat that little prolactin thing and everything's going to be just fine. And it like months and months and months went by. And I really started worrying about the kids being too far apart, you know, that sort of secondary infertility delay to seeking care, really stressing about all these things that really don't matter in the long run. and started doing fertility treatment. I was a fellow at Stanford at the time, and was so I was able to like be treated at work. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Like, part of that stressful thing about, you know, going through fertility treatment is trying to figure out how you're going to get those appointments in and stuff like that. So I was able to like do IUIs at work, and didn't work. Ended up doing IVF and multiple embryo transfers later, you know, finally have my son. So
what was, can I ask you, and thank you for being so honest and sharing so boldly. I think that's an interesting window as a Stanford fellow, you know, going through procedures at work, you kind of can't leave it at work because you're at work. And then I guess I'm wondering, what's the dominant feeling for you in a season like that? Is there a lot of stress? Are you starting to feel sad? Is it just kind of overwhelming? I know it's probably hard to put it into one, but.
So many emotions. Anger was a pretty common one, because I was seeing people being successful with their fertility journeys, and why not me? Sadness. Talking about other people's miscarriages and fertility journeys.
Yeah.
When you're kind of in the middle of it yourself, you can't, you know, it's like you can't ever leave it. Like, that's your job. You can't be distracted, you know, by focusing on something else. Grateful, like so grateful that I understood what the medication was and I could ask my nurse, you know, I didn't have to be on hold waiting, you know, for someone to pick up the phone. Like, I could run down the hall and be like, wait, how does this work? Again, grateful to, I mean, gosh, with the progesterone shots you know, have my own nurse give me shots. Like, I mean, when my patients freak out about that, I'm like, I was so lucky. I was able to do that,
right,
at work. A big mix of positive and negative emotions, all like tension across the board, you know, self-doubt, you know, I waited too long, you know, I didn't realize until later in my career, you know, fertility in physicians is so much more common. It's 1 in 6 in the general population, 1 in 4 in physicians. Yep.
And,
just not being aware of that, not understanding that, wishing I'd kind of not just assume that I understood stuff. There's a lot of shame. Yeah. I mean, I'm a fertility doctor. I should be able to get pregnant. I should be able to. Holy moly. And then, when I finally did get pregnant, so much guilt and shame and worry. And when my belly started showing, trying to hide it behind these like huge, you know, white coats, and like wanting to like wish I had like a big button and said I was infertile too, being kicked out of patients' rooms because I was pregnant. And you know, how could you possibly have a doctor that was pregnant in a infertility clinic?
Right.
You know, sorry.
I could, that idea of a pin makes so much sense. It's like, I want to qualify what you're seeing. I have an experience.
And you probably couldn't do that.
No.
I mean, not that you would have a pin, but just share your journey. Like, I'm going to talk about me for a second. Just please
totally.
Hold. Yeah.
Yeah. So lots of emotions, you know, gratitude with shame, anger, frustration, you know, everything.
A huge part of what we're going to talk about on this podcast is just the idea that infertility changes your life, really. And there's a lot of things under the word life. You know, you can think about changes the way you view your body, changes the way you view your future or your relationships. At Uniquely Knitted, if you're a longtime listener, you would know that we run process groups. So we have people come and join virtual groups where we talk through all of the feelings, all the ways that we're changing. And one thing that we're noticing, and we notice is true in our own life too as well, is that nobody tells you that infertility will be life-changing. You kind of discover halfway through in this really bizarre moment of, I think this has changed my whole life. You know, it starts as a struggle, or maybe let's go see a doctor. And then somewhere in the middle there, you go, why do I feel so different? My relationships are different. You know, I can't call my mom the same way I used to. My relationships with my sisters are different. And my future, my body, all this stuff. I feel like that was true for us as we kind of discovered that. as a doctor, you're going through this. You're also walking patients through this. What's your view of how we find ourselves in this life change? Do you feel like, you know, do you want to almost introduce this to people on their first meeting? I don't know. That would probably be a bad idea.
You're about to get hit by a truck, yeah. Okay? Emotionally.
Yeah. Prepared. Oh my gosh. Well, it's one of those things where I don't think you can really process it until later. And so trying to introduce it to somebody at the very beginning, I think would be overwhelming because they're just trying to figure out what tests they should do and kind of what treatments are available and things like that. There's this magic point that I see with my patients and in my relationship with them. It's a moment of surrender, and it's really magical. And I can't talk to patients about it before I see it, but when it happens, it is so beautiful. And it can come up in lots of different ways. After, you know, a failed embryo transfer, maybe it's their third or fourth embryo transfer. And in my discussions, of course, I'm answering questions about, you know, this intervention or that supplement or things like that. But the point where the patient kind of finally says something to themselves or something to me is just like, you know what, I'm just going to do the best I can. And whatever happens, happens. It's just this magic moment where you see them, you know, if I could describe it, it's less of this like clawing and trying to control every aspect of the journey to sort of saying, hey, I'm going to do the best I can and I'm stop being so damn hard on myself.
Right. Right.
That is a beautiful thing. And it's something that I don't always see. Sometimes I see it when they come back, you know, and they've processed after a year or two. But sometimes I see it in the moment and that is really incredible. But you can't like tell someone, oh, just surrender to this process. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Give up the control because you feel like you have no control. So, you know, totally. It's like, so yeah, I see you in that. It's almost like, I feel like I see it in our prosecute group leaders. It's like the point where it's like, I'm finally going to accept that this is my reality. Like we always say, like, you need to make friends with your reality, like not just know your reality, make friends with it. It's like, this is my reality. This is what I'm going through. But it's so hard because then you're admitting that that's your reality.
Yeah.
And you don't want to admit that that's your reality. You don't want that to
Absolutely.
Be your reality. Yeah.
We talk a lot about how that's really the first step of resilience is accepting reality, you know, accepting that this is where you're at. Because so many people, myself included, when you're going through something difficult, you want to get out of the difficulty, get through it as quick as possible. I'm wondering, is that what you see from patients? That's what we were doing. Just so you know, just like when we went to a doctor, it was like, how can I pay you the least amount of money, be here the as quick as possible and get a baby as quick as possible. But then it doesn't always seem to work like that. Is it difficult to work in a field where people, I guess, know, you know, in a field like this, people don't want to be there, but they do want to be there. Is it just a difficult relationship to the topic of fertility, infertility? You're there and you're solving in a miraculous way this issue and you're providing comfort and care, but at the same time, nobody really wants to be there. Does that make sense?
It totally does. Yeah. And one of my YouTube videos where I'm talking about like what to ask at your first fertility visit, I share like as a fertility doctor, I realize that none of my patients really want to be there,
right?
Like they really don't want to meet me. Because
What's that like?
Well, you just kind of surrender to it. And, you know, I realize like I can, you know, I tell people, you know, I can't promise that there's going to be a baby at the end of this, you know, in the way that you envision. But I can promise you compassionate care and I can answer your questions along the way and, you know, make sure that we, you know, are on this journey together. It is so true. There's a tension between, you know, knowing that I'm there to help somebody, but that they actually really don't wish they were there in the first place, right? I mean, people have equated, and I'm sure some of the studies that you guys have come across in your work have equated dealing with a diagnosis of infertility like dealing with a diagnosis of cancer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, why me? This isn't fair. You know, just all of those things kind of line up. And I think fertility too It honestly, for a lot of people, it's the first real struggle that they've ever had. And it's often the first time that they're really in the medical field and like having to go to appointments and take medication. And so most people, you know, in their late 20s or 30s, they haven't lost a parent, you know, they haven't maybe been fired from their job or, you know, kind of, and so, and then also we've been lied to our whole life, right? Like you have to fear getting pregnant before you want to, and nobody finishes the equation that, oh, when you stop that contraception that works really well, it might not be as easy as your friend, you know, friend's journey. So, right. You know, we're lied to. A lot of people haven't had to struggle before. And then to add layer upon layer, if you don't have fertility coverage,
right.
Going into debt or having to pay for miscarriage care or something, like, all you don't want to be financially paying for grief, you know, like comes at you in all these different ways. Yeah. And honestly, the fertility doctor or a lot of the, you know, the team, we get the brunt of that. We get a lot of anger and, you know, backlash and frustration. And I just have to remind myself, you know, gosh, these people, they just want a baby. And they, you know, people come back to me later and they're like, God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. You're like, it's fine. It's okay.
I'm good.
You know. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think it changes you in so many ways. And especially when you're in it, for me, you just basically painted my whole story of infertility of just like not a lot of trauma growing up, like didn't really have any big, huge things. Yeah. Like parent die or loss of a job. Like this was my first medical situation, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. And first major trauma that I had in my life was infertility. And I think I look back at myself now with compassion, but then I didn't have a lot of compassion for myself because it was just so much change, so many things. And yeah, I just think it changes you. In what ways do you see maybe within yourself, in your journey or with your patients in ways that it changes who you are?
Many ways, but I think the biggest one is your perception of yourself. So many expectations for how your life is going to be. Like so many people are like, okay, you know, we're getting married and then we want to have a baby a year later or like just whatever. You just kind of plan this out and, realizing just accepting that lack of control, just so much that we've talked about, but just learning so much about yourself along the way, like how you deal with struggle and how you perceive yourself and your coping abilities. Yeah. I mean, you know, really assuming that you're able to achieve everything that you set your mind to, like you're, you know, the American philosophy is you work hard enough and you do what you're supposed to do, and you're going to get into that college that you want to, you're going to get that job that you want to. And, you know, having a baby should be the same way. It should be, you know, a given, you know, and okay, if it's not happening easily, I'm going to follow all these guidelines, but I'm still going to get that goal because I'm doing all the right things.
Yeah. I always say my type A people really struggle in this infertility world.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And not that if you're not type A, you don't, it's still a struggle, but just even Doug being super type A and me not being as type A, I feel like this was like, wait, the script that I did for my life of how I got jobs and how I got into my college and all this stuff doesn't work in this world. Like you can't outwork it. You can't perfect it. You can't out hustle it, however you want to say it. And that's just very, very, very ungrounding, I would say. I don't know if you've observed that too.
Absolutely. That's a really good word for it. Ungrounding.
Yeah.
Yeah. It knocks you on your ass.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
that's another way to
really
put it.
Does.
There's this concept that all of us have this idealized version of ourselves, and this idealized version of ourselves is this thing that we hope to become, or this version of ourselves that doesn't have the same struggles that we do. You know, they're really competent, and we ideally want to, you know, we're like living into this idealized version. As we grow, we want to be this idealized version. And then really most of adulthood is coming to reality that we're not this idealized version of ourselves, but we are the real version of ourselves. And you know, maybe the idealized version of ourselves got into this university and doesn't have the family of origin trauma that you do. But then the adult version of yourself is coming to grips with, like, you know, what your capacity is in vocation, in education, and coming to grips with your family of origin and all that. And I think I'm just even realizing right now, there's definitely an idealized version of our bodies, I think, that we have. You know, maybe that's the, when you're younger, I always say this. When I was younger, I would go surfing in the morning, school in the afternoon, tennis after that, stay up and, you know, hang out with friends, and then go skateboarding at midnight. And I'd wake up the next morning fine. You know, just fine.
Wow.
If you did that now, you'd be in bed for a week.
If I did that now, I would be admitted, you know, to like urgent care in the morning. But you know, I think infertility comes along also at that same time that your body is, you're waking up to a more real version of your body. Do you ever feel like that? And I'm wondering, do you see that in your practice, that there's this waking up to, oh, this body that I thought I was going to have or assumed I would have until my 50s and 60s is now presenting me with a reality I'm not comfortable with?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think physically bodies can change through the whole fertility process, whether it's increased cortisol levels and, you know, metabolism changing and age and medication and water weight, like physically you can change. But also the people have told me, and I felt this too, you feel like your body is failing you.
Yeah.
You know, I like when I wasn't ovulating, it's like, come on, like everybody has a 28-day cycle. I mean, as a fertility doctor, I know that that's not the case, but it's just like, why do I have to take medication to get my body to do what it's supposed to do? And, you know, I felt healthy. I felt like I was doing all the right things, but yet my body still wasn't working. And so that frustration, that perception, that feeling that of your body failing you is awful as well.
I grew up in a faith-based background. That was a hard thing to say. and I felt that way. And I also felt like I had the add-on, like, it's what my body is supposed to do.
Like morally or something?
Morally. Like, yeah, okay. Or like why I was put on this earth was to bear children as a woman. And that was really hard. And I think that happened, that realization, to go back to like how it changes you. I don't think in the moment I realized that was all happening. Yeah. Like, but it was happening. In the sidebar, it was happening over here, but I feel like it's slowly over time you realize, oh, I'm so much more anxious. Oh, I'm feeling a little bit like I'm having like bluer days than normal, or I'm, you know, a little bit more angry. I remember, never forget Doug Brown, this sweet man. No. When I was in the treatment in the midst of it, I was late, but I blamed him, even though it was me. I was late. And I don't even think I took ownership over that at all. I think it was later.
All was forgiven. We were
later.
In the midst
I know. And you're so sweet and sweet. But I don't think I realized that until over time, or even when I was out of it, that I was like, oh, I was such in a dark place, and sometimes didn't even realize how a dark place I was in.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that's the right way to think about our bodies. Our bodies are failing us. I'm just, from a physician standpoint, someone who treats bodies in a lot of ways, is that the right way to view it? Because I sometimes think about my own body when it comes to fertility as like, oh, I'm just a dumpster fire. Like it just didn't work. Or is there a healthier maybe way to think about our own bodies?
I mean, I don't want people to feel like their body is failing them. So I don't think the word, is it right to feel that way? No, of course not. It's just, as a person who went through it and hearing from my patients, a lot of people do feel that way. And of course, I don't want people to carry around that added shame. It's just really, you know, I hate the word, but normal in air quotes to feel that way,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It should be the baseline that we are fertile, or that we do ovulate, or that we can get pregnant, or that we can carry a baby. Because that's what we were taught. Like you watch a movie and, you know, the first thing is, you know, positive pregnancy test. Somebody surprises. It's like so cute. And the very next scene is a delivery, you know, and there's so much that can happen in between. Gosh, talk about miscarriage, right? People, the most common cause of miscarriage is something within the embryo, you know, a genetic issue within the embryo. But every single woman that I know who has a miscarriage, even if they know that, you know, scientifically and medically and, you know, logically, they're still going to feel like they are broken. Like yeah. their body did something wrong to not carry that pregnancy to term.
Why do you think that happens? Why do you think we do that?
I mean, it's beat in us from, you know, misogyny, patriarchy, everything that has to do with family building is the woman's fault. You know, I mean, we didn't even realize that, you know, the sex of the embryo is from sperm, right? Until pretty recently in the world. And, you know, Henry VIII would have a lot more living wives if he had realized that it was his sperm that was making him not have a son, right? So I think there's just a lot of expectations that are on the shoulders of women that are from, you know, society, our arts, religion, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about being raised in a faith-based society. You know, sometimes when people are trying to comfort others with infertility and miscarriage, they'll say, oh, you know, it's just in God's plan.
Right.
You know, this is the way it's supposed to be. And it's sort of like a double-edged sword, because I think they're trying to say like everything happens for a reason and you're going to learn from this, you're going to grow from it. At the same time, it's like, well, then why me? You know, what did I do wrong? Why would God do this to me?
Right. I would think, I would think that. I would always go, so God didn't want me to get pregnant? That feels confusing for me. I know. And it's so true. Like what you said, like, and in our process groups, I always, when someone I feel like is doing that, I feel like I'm a failure. I feel like my body's failing me, all that. I always try to combat it with, if you could do something, if Dr. Laura Shaheen told you, go stand on your head for 3 days, you would do it if it would solve it. Like, you're doing everything you can. You're giving your blood, sweat, tears, money, all of it to this thing. And then we blame ourselves, even though it's not our fault. It's not our fault. We are not failing. We are not failing as women, men, whatever. It's, it's just so hard not to think that. And I think that's, you're right. We've been trained to think like, oh, it must be your fault, especially our little type A people. Cause it must be, you know.
Well, because that goes back to that feeling. If you work hard enough, if you do all the right things, you will achieve that goal. So if that goal is not being met, then it's got to come back on you.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
So it's that tension between wanting to be in control and realizing that you're not. I'm curious about your process groups. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about what happens and like, what does that mean? Is it like, I mean, I understand like group therapy or something. What's a process group?
Yeah, Doug, you go first and then I'll add.
There's, if you think of like a spectrum, on one end, there's group therapy and on the end, then there's a support group. Process groups are right in the middle. They're like group therapy in that they're facilitated by a professional who's going to walk you through the process. And they're more like group therapy in that they're built on common language and they're taught in a way, but there's a certain way in which we're processing. There's individuals are allowed to share their experiences with infertility, process their emotions, share their traumas. And then there's kind of a guided response time where people share what that experience of that sharing was like, able to pour into that person, validate those experiences. I mean, it's kind of structured in that way. Group therapy and support groups are wonderful things, a little bit different in their structure. But for us, the reason why we built the process groups the way that we did was that we were trying to give a dedicated time for someone to alleviate the stress and anxiety and the trauma of what they've gone through. One of the best ways to start to confront trauma is to share your personal story with people and receive validation, especially from people who've been through similar things. They're 6 weeks long. There's videos and there's a workbook thing that you go through, but it's all just to communicate a shared language about how to process, how to communicate what you've been through. Did I get close, Jesse?
Yes.
Pretty close.
I'm going to simplify everything that you just said. A support group, which are great, I think is more let's fix it. Let's fix it. Let's do it. Which is fine.
Or get hyped. Get hyped up to keep going.
To get pregnant, to get the thing, which is great. We were involved in a support group for a really long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the process group, I feel like, is like, let's feel it.
Yeah.
Let's feel it.
Let's deal with it.
And it's very structured. Someone shares their story, everything that they've been through. We pause and we give reflections back. We don't give advice. I'm very clear on that. We don't give advice. We just think about what, like if I was listening to your story, Dr. Laura Shaheen, I don't know why I say your whole name, Dr. Laura.
Oh, yeah,
it feels
Laura.
Appropriate.
Just Laura.
I don't know why. I love your last name. So I'm like, oh, I'll just say the whole thing, add the whole thing. Like I would sit here and think about what has come up for me. What is the same? Oh my gosh, I felt guilt too. Like all those things. There were so many things that I was even thinking about. A major struggle with us was secondary, like I wouldn't say infertility, but like trying to get, you know, adopt another child after we had a child in our home. So much of what you said, I was like, yep. Age gap, all those things. And so that's what I would like share back would be like, oh, Dr. Laura, I felt those same things. And then maybe a little bit encouragement. Like, I don't blame you. You would never blame me. Like that's kind of the rhythm, but it's very structured. It's not a lot of time to be like, let's sit around and talk about IVF. It's like, no, let's just process it.
Yeah. Very focused on emotions and feelings. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then do you have different groups for different things like miscarriages or IVF?
Phenomenal question.
Great
do you
question.
Think you could handle this one?
We do not. And the reason we do is based in research and guided by psychology. So the reason is that the point of a process group is to kind of create a microcosm of community. And community is best experienced in the diversity of it. So everyone that we are in our process groups have definitely dealt with infertility in some capacity.
Okay.
But the diversity of it is actually what's beneficial to us in terms of the processing. So me sharing that I've, you know, experienced male factor infertility, it would be wonderful if it was a group full of all men who've experienced male factor infertility, but the different experiences kind of provide different mirrors that mirror back to me, different experiences. And then that actually becomes very beneficial for our resilience and our connection. So that's why.
That's great. Thank you. And when you say structured, is it like each meeting has a specific goal to talk about, like with the workbooks?
Okay. Yes. Yeah.
So
cool.
They can watch the video of like a topic of like getting your needs met in your community. And so they watch those videos, do a little workbook part. The workbook part, I always am like hesitant to share because it sounds like homework and
it's
I super struggle with the kid with homework. So I'm like, it's not homework. It's very light. And so we talk about that subject for a little bit and then we process our stories. So,
and to bring this back, I'd love to know your thoughts on this. The whole reason why we do this is that going back to that idealized version of ourselves, we have this idealized version of ourselves and we end up as an adult kind of coming down to reality of I'm not this idealized version. For many of us, it was, I was going to be a mom. Maybe for me, it was like a young dad with lots of kids. And then I was never able to get that. So I was always judging myself against this idealized version of myself. Really, a very helpful tool in addressing that is connecting with other people who've gone through this same struggle and normalizing not my idealized version of myself, but my real version. And I think that's what's hard when you're going through treatment is for me, I was trying to live up. It was like, this medical treatment is going to fix me so I can get back to where I was supposed to be, you know? And I think that's an interesting place to be at in terms of a medical profession is you're dealing with people who are like, can we get this out of the way so I can get back to this version of myself that was never supposed to be here? Do you, and this is my question for you, do you feel the pressure to do that, you know, to almost deliver something for patients so that they can get back to this version of themselves that doesn't have to be in this reality? That's a big question.
Yeah.
No, that's a really big question because I am in the career of making dreams come true, right? Like
totally.
I'm seeing people who have a dream of having a family or having one child or whatever their family is, and they're struggling to fulfill that goal, that vision of where they want to be. And I am supposed to be that guide to make it happen. And I think one of the hardest things is when I can see how to get them to that goal the fastest way, and they don't want to go on that path. It's sort of like a birth plan. You know, you come to your delivery and, you know, you show the doctor your birth plan. Like, I want to, you know, deliver in water, you know, whatever. And then, you know, you need an urgent C-section at the end of the day.
Totally.
You want mom and baby to be alive and healthy, right? And I'm seeing people struggle with, you know, really significant medical issues like no sperm, azoospermia, you know, and I, you know, we can try to do interventions and try to figure out why and maybe even aspirate sperm. But, you know, maybe we don't ever find it and they need to have their family in a different way, or someone that absolutely wants to have a baby with their egg and they have premature ovarian failure or very, very low, you know, egg supply. And I'm like, we could get to where your vision of where you want to be, like your biological egg and your biologic sperm, but it might take us 5, 6, 10 egg retrievals, you know, because we're only getting one embryo each time. Whereas we could do donor egg, we could do donor sperm, and we could have a baby in 9 months, you know? And so trying to like navigate and not shatter dreams, but give realistic expectations for the limitations of what IVF can do, therefore what I can do as a doctor, and trying to reconcile the crap that they're hearing on Instagram and TikTok. And, you know, I'm the evil doctor that can't just give a supplement to make your egg quality perfect. I brought up a lot of stuff in that 5 minutes, but that is really delicate line to draw. I never want to be that fertility doctor that's like, oh, you know, have a FSH of 20, therefore poor egg quality. You're never going to get pregnant with your own egg, because as long as they're ovulating, it can absolutely happen.
Right.
I just don't know. Is it going to happen, you know, in 5 years or never?
Right.
But I can tell you, if you did IVF with a FSH of 20, the chance of live birth is way less than 5%, you know, like,
And what does that feel like?
Yeah, what's that feel like?
I balance, like, I always try to put myself in their position. They had this vision of they wanted a family in a certain way. They wanted to be able to surprise their husband, because I'm putting myself in the woman's mind, surprise their husband with a home pregnancy test, you know, and, you know, the magic, you know, the movie scene. And it just, you know, might not happen that way. And I do talk about, listen, you can still be a mom. You know, you can, I don't know how exactly it's going to happen for you, whether it's adoption or foster or donor egg or, you know, all of these different things. Or maybe it'll just happen naturally. Like, that's the hard thing too, is when people are saying, well, I don't understand. I'm a bad candidate, air quotes, for IVF. There's a very low chance that IVF could work, but yet you're saying I could still get pregnant on my own. What the heck, Dr. Shaheen, reconcile that, you know, like, I don't,
does that feel like pressure?
Oh yeah.
I would feel pressure.
Cause I don't want to hurt people's feelings, you know, but I also don't want to, like not share, like, okay, yes, this can happen, but it's a less than 1% chance of happening. Like, I think it's honestly futile. And they're like, but if there's one egg, like, it could still happen. I'm like, well, it could. Yes, you are right. But at what cost? You know, financial cost, emotional, we're all limited. Time is a resource. And so really trying to walk that line, you know, and sometimes it just takes a while.
Yeah.
And walking that line, I think, is so important for the process. Because for so many people, there is a medical issue happening, and then there's this emotional issue that we've been, you know, been talking about, that you're having to overcome maybe your preconceived ideas of how your life was going to go, but then also, you know, even how treatment was going to go. You know, you come to a doctor and you think, okay, I'm willing to do this. And then I hear what you're saying. You're like, well, the quickest way, or the way that I can give you the best, you know, numbers, is that if we commit to eight rounds of this or that. And they're like, well, that's not what I was thinking. And so there's this emotional part that you're navigating. How important is it as a doctor, or maybe how important is it to find a doctor who is willing to walk that line with you? And you're not asking you to throw any doctors under the bus, but in your profession, do you feel like that's a line that some people are willing to walk, others aren't willing to walk? Is it hard to walk that line?
It would be a lot easier if I was just like, yeah, it's not going to work, you know, and right, I just like cut it down. Yeah. I mean, my consults could be like 5 minutes but you know, people come to me and they say, my doctor never really explained, you know, age and fertility, or they never really explained, you know, how the miscarriage could still be from an embryo issue, even if the chromosome testing was normal, you know, they led me to believe that it's my fault. And not that, I mean, I'm not in the room, I'm not, you know, hearing the conversations with the doctors, but, you know, or, you know, again, like I said, like, I'm not going to be the doctor that says, oh, it's never going to happen for you, like, unless you do IVF, like a lot of doctors will say that. And so I think it would be a lot easier if I just didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
That's horrible. Maybe you should edit that.
No.
But also if I don't care, if I don't try to educate, then I should really hang up my white coat and, move on, because, you know, it's not just, you know, the medical treatment, it's the teaching and it's the, you know, compassionate passing on of, you know, what we know and what we don't know, and just how limited the treatment options that we have, that I think separates different doctors from different doctors.
In what ways would you say that infertility has changed you? And what ways do you feel like is the most common way it changes people with your clients? Patients, not clients, patients.
Yeah, I can speak to me for sure. It made me a better doctor.
Mm.
I don't think that you have to go through infertility in order to be a good fertility doctor.
Yeah.
Just like you don't have to have cancer to be a good cancer doctor.
Right.
But there is no question that I am more patient with patients' questions or confusion than I was before I had infertility myself. So that's huge.
Yeah.
Also, just, you know, with experience, learning that the patients don't want to hear, you know, see graphs and look at all these numbers and things. They just want to know that they're going to be taken care of. They're going to be get honest, you know, information, and, you know, that I'm kind of with them on this journey. Personally, it changed my perception of myself, made me more resilient, made me realize, I mean, it was the first medical struggle that I ever had, and I'm a type A person. So just kind of touching on all of these things, like, well, of course, if I work hard enough, I'm going to be able to kind of beat this thing. And, and then patience with myself too, like that surrender, you know, especially after the first, second embryo transfers didn't work, just being like, okay, you know, grateful for the opportunity to be able to do more embryo transfers. Like, I had more embryos, I had the resources to be able to do it. And surrendering to that. And it's helped me be a better friend to people, a better doctor. I think it helped me be a better mom, honestly. It changed, honestly, everything. Just like any sort of struggle I've been through with my life, when I look back on, you know, my life, what have I learned from the most? It's the things that have been really hard, that have built resilience, built, you know, strength, given me perspective that things aren't always going to be the same. Like, it is temporary, even if it feels like it's forever.
It is temporary. It's so good. And what way do you feel like you see the biggest change with your patients?
A lot of the same things. I think they learn a lot about themselves along the way. I am fortunate that I've been practicing for almost 20 years. So I have a lot of instances of people coming back for second or adding to their family and being able to, I'm like, yeah, this is what we need to do to get you pregnant. How are you doing?
Right.
You know, So I'm spending more time catching up and listening to them rather than focused on the medical stuff so often. And they, listening to them reflect on it and sort of saying, you know, I would never wish this journey on anyone, but I learned so much about myself. I built so much resilience, and it's a horrible thing to have to go through. But I think in the long run, I'm actually a better person for it.
Laura, I think the things that we've been talking about, this idea of starting with the reality that infertility is life-changing. And when you take that truly seriously, it almost feels like a lot of the care for infertility falls in line. If we take it as serious as it is, from a therapeutic perspective, we need to give people space to process, space to let this out, to deal with the trauma and the anxiety of it. When it comes to treating it from a medical standpoint, we have to give people space to be in this wrestling and finding a doctor and being a doctor that allows people to wrestle both mentally, physically, with what their expectations were and what the reality is, finding a friend, a kind person who's going to walk them down this road. I even think, you know, making sure that there are enough doctors in a community who are like this to provide this type of care, making sure that there are not 1,000 roadblocks and tons of red tape to get to a doctor who's willing to sit and become friends with you and, you know, be like, yeah, we know how to get you pregnant, but how are you doing? I mean, that to me addresses the reality of what we're going through, is that this is really hard.
Yeah.
It's medically really hard to figure out, but emotionally really hard to figure out.
And that not everyone has that privilege. I know a couple of people from our process groups, they only have one fertility clinic in their area, or they only have, like, you know, that, and that's what's so hard.
Or they have to go to another state or another county to figure out all of that. Yep.
Can I give you a compliment?
Oh gosh, maybe. Yes.
Can you accept it? You know your demographic really well. You really do. You know, and maybe say, yes, you've experienced infertility yourself. And yes, I feel like I knew that because I was that and am that. But you know, like so many things that you said, I'm like, yep. Like, you know this demographic really, really well. Like, and I just wanted to give you that compliment.
Oh, well, thank you. And I appreciate all of it. You guys are doing to highlight the mental health aspect of this whole journey. I think that's a piece that has been ignored for way too long. And just all of the research and your processing groups and everything that you're doing, the content that you create, your podcast, all of it is providing this support that is essential. And so I really appreciate what you guys are doing.
Yes.
Thank you for saying that.
I hope my vision for the infertility community is that we have a revolution of care over the next 25 years. I really think it's needed. I think it's possible. There's a lot of work to be done, a lot of things to be created, a lot of things to fight for. But I feel like we're all in it together to keep providing care for one of life's oldest issues. You know, if you think about things that have been around forever, struggling to get pregnant has been around forever. And it's only in the last, what feels like 50 years, that we've provided a different, maybe a spark of an option for true care. So it's an honor to be in it together.
Yeah. And I'm just so blown away by you too. And this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast, is I think there is a lot of people that get a lot of healing from you. Because I don't think there's, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but I don't hear a lot of positive stories of doctors or clinics or whatever in our process groups. And I just think it's super powerful that you would talk about this on your Instagram, on your podcast, on all this TikTok, whatever. And I think that people are getting more healing than you realize. Just be like, oh, she gets it. She understands. She is commenting on this. Wow. It's like a breath of fresh air, or like a drink in a desert. Cause I don't think a lot of people have that experience. Mm. So
thank you so much. Whenever I teach residents or people, medical students that are kind of going through training, I'm like, yeah. I'm going to give you a lecture on what causes miscarriages and what tests you should do. But the most important thing that you should do when you diagnose a miscarriage is tell the patient, you're so sorry. It's not their fault. They're probably not going to remember anything else that you say from that. So you got to have a handout. but it you know, you are sorry, you care, and it is not their fault.
Yes.
Like, that's what you need to say.
Yeah.
You know, we're not taught that in medical school. We're taught there's an answer to everything, right, and there's a medication and an intervention for everything. And, you know, sometimes it's not, and sometimes it's okay to sit in the gray and just sit with your patient and just say, hey, I'm here too, but you, it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Yeah. I love that. There's, at the end of the day, there's humans in all of these systems, and we have to start with the humanity of all of it. Dr. Laura, it's so wonderful to have you on the podcast. We hope that we can stay connected and continue to do things in the future.
Yeah,
absolutely. I can't thank you enough. I was really looking forward to this today, and just really, really appreciate getting to know you guys better.
Right back at you. Thank you for listening to the Infertility Feelings Podcast, a show produced by the nonprofit Uniquely Knitted. This is your place to process, cry, and laugh about infertility. We are so grateful for all of our amazing donors that we have who support our work. If you would like to learn more about how we serve the community and support the work of Uniquely Knitted, we encourage you to check out our website at uniquelyknitted.org. If you enjoy this podcast and would like more people to hear it, please give us a rating and a comment in Apple Podcasts. This is just the best way for more people to hear these conversations.